Hi. Does anybody have a big book? Where's this chair? Oh, okay. Oh, thanks. Can I borrow it from you? Just in case I forget. Something I want to look it up. I want to look up something. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Haven't had a drink. Found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. Almost forgot. And, birthday coming up if I make it. So here we go. It's good to be here. It's good for me to be at any AA meeting. It's a privilege to share an AA meeting. And I don't remember when sometimes these things come upon you. You don't even realize you're changing. Especially when you're new, you don't realize you're changing until somebody comes up to you and tells you changed. And points it out to you. Sometimes the changes that take place, you don't even realize they're taking place until 6 months after they've taken place. Something happens and you don't react to it the way you used to react to it, or some situation in your life. And there was a time that, and I hope this doesn't come across in any way like I'm saying, look at me or anything. It's just sort of like, a logical development. As a matter of fact, it's a prophesized development in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you go to chapter 5, I believe it is, it says something like this on page 63. Not even something like this, even though I've memorized it. It actually says this. It says, it talks about our troubles, basically being our own making. It says we're selfish and we're self-centered. Not talking about you guys. I can tell you, you're like the cream of the crop when it comes to alcoholism. You're like saintly alcoholics. But I was pretty much selfish and self-centered. It says we think we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And I was the king of self-pity, believe me. And I used to love sitting by that phonograph, listening to those LP records. Only the Lonely was a good one for me. Or Rainy Days and Mondays. It's a good Alky song. Karen Carpenter, Good, Running on Empty, good Alky song. Really. And, I had a, when you have this disease, and this disease is serious, even after I stopped drinking, I'd be 3 or 4 months sober. It says you have to go to any lengths. Any lengths for me, sometimes any lengths is when one of those songs come on, you got to turn it off. That's how serious this disease is. This disease is so serious. Listening to a song you used to listen to all the time is a phrase, a song, a thought is enough to send you into self-pitiesville. I'm not only addicted, I'm an alcoholic, I'm not only addicted to drinking. Drinking is really the symptom. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, right? We're restless, we're irritable, we're discontented. Unless we can experience, the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. The dis-ease we have is something we have when we're sober. It has to do with thinking. Where I'm really addicted to is the thinking deal. The bad thinking. I can't stop. Just one thought. What am I going to do? Just start off just like this. What am I going to do about just fill in the blank? What's going to happen when? If he or she calls, what am I going to say? Just fill in the blank. One thought. You talk about one drink? One thought. You think you can stop that one thought? That one thought comes up? You got it for the week. You're dancing with that. You know how they say, when do you stop dancing with the gorilla? When the gorilla gets tired. You know what I mean? You get that one thought. What am I going to do about the money? What am I going to do about the rent? What am I going to do about my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my kid? What am I going to do about the job? What am I going to do about my boss? What am I going to do if this happens? What if that happens? Why did I say that? What do they think? You know, why is this happening to me? Why do I feel the way? You just just pick a thought. Pick a thought. I'll tell you what. Just pick any thought you think. Because if you're an alcoholic, I know what you're thinking. Listen, I got some good news for you. Here's some good news. I know the stuff. I know all the thoughts you're thinking. I know the thoughts you're not sharing. I know everything you're not sharing at the meetings. I know the stuff you're not even telling your sponsor. I know what you're not telling your sponsor because I know what I'm not telling my sponsor. I know what you're not sharing at meetings because I know what I'm not sharing at meetings. I know what you're thinking at 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't get to sleep. I know what every one of you is thinking. I know the whole deal. You know what I mean? I know the deal. But listen, don't worry about it. Because what you're suffering from, the stuff, I know you absolutely know deep down in your heart that you're the only one who knows this stuff or suffers this stuff and nobody will really understand. I get that, okay? And the reason you don't share it and you don't tell anybody is because you know if you did, they'd all laugh at you and they throw up on you and they say, get that guy out of here because he's disgusting. I get that. I understand that. But I want you to know that there's not a thing you're thinking, there's nothing that's going on in your life that's new under the sun, okay? I mean, it's just not. And it's common to all alcoholics. It's absolutely common to all alcoholics, and we all feel and think the exact same way. And by the way, those thoughts, that happens to be, that stuff, you know, the stuff that you're embarrassed to talk about or think about or even admit to yourself because you're in denial about, you don't even know you're thinking that stuff. Because 5 seconds after you're thinking it, you're telling yourself you're not thinking it, or you're not going to think it, or you don't even want to deal with it. You know what I mean? You know, that stuff, that is the disease. That's the disease. It's like all through your brain. It's on every neuron of your brain. It's like you're like swimming in a soup of it. And even while I'm talking, and you're analyzing and listening to me, it's got to get through that soup. It's not like off to the side. It's like there. It's there. It's so elusive. It says the feeling is so elusive. It says our alcoholic life seems the only normal life. This is the crazy thing. As diseased as your brain is and my brain is. Now, whenever I point the finger at you and I say you, I'm talking about me too. As diseased as your brain is, as sick as it is, the sickness feels absolutely normal to you. As a matter of fact, you're incredibly comfortable in the sickness. You're comfortable. Self-pity and feeling sorry for yourself and being depressed and blaming other people and being angry feels comfortable to you. You want to do it. You long to do it. You can't wait to. You can't stop doing it. It's like, remember when you couldn't stop drinking? Anybody have that drinking, you know, the drinking deal? You know, since we have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Remember that deal where you said, I'm not going to drink today? You know, and then by 5 o'clock you're drinking, I'm not going to have buy booze today, and by 5 o'clock you're buying booze, I'm not going to the bar today, but 5 o'clock you're going to the bar. You remember that deal where you couldn't, when you were drinking against your will, you just had to keep on drinking and drinking, it was like absolutely no, you couldn't stop even if you want to stop? That's what goes on with the thinking. That's it. And you know something? It goes on, listen to this, this is how crazy it is. It goes on with your thinking, that crappy thinking about yourself and other people. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book in 1934 or something, Man Against Himself, said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves by their thinking. You know? And you know, as crappy as it is, we can't, you know, listen to this. Even when we're not thinking, when you think you're not thinking, it's still going on in the executive committee. Not the committee that you know about, that you talk about at the meetings. You know, you sit down at the meetings and just, oh, the committee's been going, you know. Oh, the committee in my mind. Well, at least you're invited to the meetings, you know what I mean? You got like an executive committee, it's going, that music is going, you know. Where do you think those thoughts come from? You know, when you're in the shower and all of a sudden you think about what a piece of crap you are. And, you know, when you start comparing your insides with other people's outsides and start thinking of how you don't deserve to live and those suicidal thoughts where you want to kill yourself. You don't really want to kill yourself, but really you'd like to kill yourself. You know, where do you think that stuff comes from? All that bad stuff you think about yourself and other people. You know, where do you think that's coming from? Like, you think it's being beamed in by Venus? You know, there he is, let's get him, guys, you know? Beam that thought in, you know? I know that crap you're thinking. I know that crap because I'm an alcoholic. I know you like I know me. You know, that's why sponsorship works so well. Because if you're a sponsor and you somehow start learning stuff about yourself and you start intuitively discerning these things about yourself, you know, what happens is you can look at other people and they talk to, you know, like, I know what some of my sponsees are thinking. They don't even know what they're thinking. I know what's going on. I know. I don't even listen to what they tell me. What's the point of listening to what an alcoholic tells you? It'll just, they're going to tell you stuff that they believe. What's the point? It's all lies. I look at my, I don't listen to what they tell me. I'm listening to everything they're not telling me. I'm listening to all the stuff they don't tell me. Everything that they don't tell me tells me everything about them. And they don't even know what they're not telling me. Don't understand that stuff. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example. Self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness that we don't even know we have. Because if you ask an alcoholic to be selfish, he thinks he's the greatest guy in the world. He thinks, no, I'm not selfish, they're selfish. Who? The rest of the world. You know, it's all about them. You know who they are. You know who they are, don't you? They're the reason we're in here. It's their fault, you know? And there often seems no way of getting entirely rid of himself without his aid. His aid, whoever he is. You might want to figure that deal out, because apparently you need him to get rid of it. Just quoting from the book. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. This is a takeoff of Chapter of the Agnostic. If a mere set of morals or a better philosophy of life would have saved us, we'd be sober a long time ago, but it didn't help us, you know, because we were powerless. Powerless over our thinking, powerless over the drinking. We had to find a power greater than ourselves that would solve our problem. That's why we wrote a book that's spiritual and not, it's spiritual, and it's a mental book, it's a spiritual book, and that means we're going to talk about God. And if you don't believe in God, well, that sort of thinking has to be abandoned, because that's the only cure you got. And you go right back here to chapter 5, all the way up in chapter 5, and they build on that. They say, we say, above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self. You know, if you want to think of what it means to get rid of self, just think about your thinking for a second, if you dare, you know. Mm-hmm. Think about, you know, the last time it was 3 o'clock in the morning and your mind was racing. Think about all the crap you think about during the day. Thinking about that parking garage. I think every alcoholic has like a parking garage. You know, it's like Miami International Airport. We have these huge parking garages. They're like 2,000 levels, like level 10. Is every possible money problem that could possibly happen to us in the entire universe. You know, 9 is like, you know, what's going to happen to me? All the what's going to happen to me if this. You know, level 8 is every bad, shitty thing we've done in our entire life, real or imagined, and how it's going to affect us, like, tomorrow. You know what I mean? I mean, we just have this garage of crappy, horrible, destructive, you know, like, you know, I mean, I don't know, level 4 is all the shits in our lives who are assholes and deserve to die. You know, level 3 is all the guys that are thinking bad thoughts about us. And of course, they're all thinking bad thoughts about us. I mean, there's levels and levels. There's 1,000 levels of horrible, terrible thoughts about other people and about ourselves, and they're all there. And then at any moment, they all decide to get in their cars, these thoughts, and drive out of the parking lot at once. Going through the same damn toll gate, you know what I mean? And you're there, and they're like busting through the gate. And you know, it's not even like you're thinking one thought at a time. It's like 50 thoughts at a time all coming back in, all coming at you at the same time, and they're all shitty thoughts about yourself and other people. You know? And you can't drink. You can't drink. You could drink, but you know, hopefully you won't drink. So now what do? You're an Alcoholics Anonymous. You just went to a meeting yesterday or the day before or maybe 3 hours ago. And now it's 11 o'clock at night and you got those guys and they're trying to get out of the garage. The thoughts are coming out of the garage and you can't stop them. And you can't stop them. And guess what? You can't even talk to anybody about them because you don't even know what the hell's going on. All you know is your mind is like on fire, and you're 3 years sober, and your mind is like ganging up on you. It's on fire. You want to maybe do the Bill Wilson thing, take some LSD, or you know, go to a psychiatrist and have him get you some Xanax, or you know, go to some doctor. He says, "Listen, I have no idea what." He gives you some pill. He says, "Why don't you suck on this for a while," which is the doctor's way of saying, "Listen, I have no idea what the flick is wrong with you, but suck on these things and maybe it'll quiet you down so I can treat somebody who's really sick." You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell's going on with you. You know, and you don't know what's going on with you. Now it says here, and there often seems no way of getting in touch. It says, we must or it kills us. Then it says, God makes us possible. And that's a pain in the ass. You know, that's a pain in the ass. What is it? God makes us possible. You some sort of thing you can't see, you can't feel, and you don't want to talk about because people laugh at you. Because I'll tell you, I don't know about you, but I've been to the movies lately. A lot of good movies. None of them are talking about God. They're all talking about romance and sex and looking good and losing weight and, you know, getting the right guy and the right gal and all. None of them are talking about God making anything possible. The movies I go to, the happy endings, you know what? Why people are happy? Because the woman gets the guy. Or the guy gets the woman. Or, you know, or whatever. Or they all get the money. You know, or they all, or the bad guy gets killed. You know, I mean, what the movies I go to, the reason why they make me feel good is because everything works out perfectly in the end. Just the way it doesn't happen in your life. exactly the opposite of your life. And you go to these great movies with these great endings, with these great actors that all look great because they've done the take 3,000 times with makeup. You know, let's do it this way or say it that way. And they all got script writers, you know what I mean? And they look, everything is like perfect. And you walk out of the movie, and you are so imperfect. They're even imperfect. They're taking drugs and alcohol and committing suicide and going crazy. They're not even as well as they look on the screen. And we're inundated with that, and the movies, and the TVs, and the billboards, and everything like that. And we don't have a clue as to why all those sorts are up. All those thoughts are up there. Where did they come from? Trying to get out of the garage at the same time. And you used to be able to, you know, listen, now the good thing is, you know, at least if you're an alcoholic, there are some people, I guess, just go psychotic or something like that, but at least if you're an alcoholic, we used to drink over them. I mean, I don't think drinking was necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the fact that I was drinking is probably why I didn't blow my brains out before I was 25 years old. You know what I mean? Because when those thoughts came, they're all coming out of the garage. You just listen. You're a nothing. You're a piece of shit. You're whatever it is. You throw some of that stuff in your belly, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, you're an almost. You know, when you're nothing, almost is top of the world, right? You know, so I mean, you suck that stuff down, and all of a sudden, they go back into their parking places. Nobody's trying to get out of the garage. But what do you do? What do you do when you can't drink? And they're all trying to get out of the garage at the same time, and they're honking their damn horn, and they're screaming at you, and it's all bringing these feelings up. I feel like this, and I feel like that, you know. And here's the great thing: you can't even go to meetings and talk about them because you would sound stupid. You wouldn't even know how do you explain to people that you're crazy. You talk about one thing here, one thing, but how do you explain to people? Because the crazy is not even thoughts; it's the fact that you're thinking them. All at the once, and you don't know how to stop them. You know? That's a pretty sick... That's you know what that is? That's alcoholism. That's what they're talking about in here. They're not talking about the drinking here. They say, we must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. God makes that possible. And there often seems... not. See, you should feel good about this stuff. Because you might have thought that, you know, that you're beyond help, and you're sick, and you might as well blow your brains out, because you've got 3 years, or 9 years, or 15 years, and you're still experiencing that crap, right? So that's a pretty devastating thing when you got 9 years and you've been doing this stuff for 15 years or something like that, and they're still trying to get out of the parking garage. You sort of feel like you're a failure, but you're not going to talk about it at a meeting because you got 15 years, and you talk about the fact that you're crazy at a meeting, they'll laugh at you. And that's another crazy thing. We worry about what other people think about us. Even though I know you don't worry about what other people think about you because you don't give a shit what other people think about you, but most alcoholics do worry about what other people think about them, even though they deny that they worry about what other people think about them. That's a whole other deal. But that's in some other level of the parking garage. We must or it kills us. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. That's the deal. We got to have God's help. So then you say, well, how the flick do you do that? How do you do that deal? And by the way, they ain't talking about it. Most of the AA meetings I'm going to, they're talking about other stuff. I don't know what they're talking about. They're not talking about that stuff. As a matter of fact, isn't religion bad? I don't know. The Big Book endorses and encourages church membership. It says we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. I know that's not what the wisdom of the rooms say, you know, because the wisdom of the rooms, because alcoholics are defiant son of bitches. You know, we're defiant. We don't want to do the program. We want to do the program our way. We don't want to be told what to do. You know, in the old days, what they did was you came in, they told you to get down on your knees, give your life to God, and then you come to a meeting. You know what I mean? Nowadays, it's a much worse proposition. Now, here's what used to happen. I think I've read you guys, Dr. Bob, in good old times. You ought to read it. In the old days, when you were dealing with alcoholics who were self-centered in the extreme, who were suicidal, who were self-destructive, this is how you dealt with the God thing. You said, get down on your knees and say these words in front of these 10 people, okay, and then you can go downstairs to the meeting. And if the guy said, well, I'm not going to do that, he said, well, have a nice life. And he left. And he didn't go to the meeting. But if a guy was so desperate that he did it, and he got down on his knees, and he gave his life to God, then they led him to the meetings, and that was the end of the discussion. And there was no more any problem with the God thing. Because you know something? That was sealed before the first meeting. They had what's called unity of purpose. So the meetings would have been a little bit different. Maybe a little bit more focused, a little bit different than they are now. But nowadays, because we're kinder and we're easier, we don't tell people to do anything. Because we wouldn't want to hurt the alcoholic's feelings. We don't even tell you to pick up a chair. You know, that's the one thing that we used to do to have them walk up. We said, well, if you're embarrassed, we'll put it right here. You know, you can sneak up at 3 o'clock in the morning and pick it up. What happens is, now, you may not like this, and I appreciate you want to do it your way, and nobody likes being told what to do. When you give a sick and suffering mind that doesn't even know how sick and suffering it is, the option of trying to figure out if and when they decide they want to do the third step or the fourth step or something like that, a mind that's used to rationalize, telling itself rational lies, explaining why they're different. When you give that disease, when you feed that disease, that self-centered, I'm better, I'm different, I'm unique. When you give that person the opportunity to do it any way they want to do it, why don't you just give them a drink and kill them? Because you're killing them. Because yes, a few will do it, but most will figure out why they don't have to do it. And get mad at you if you tell them they have to do it. And they'll die, and they'll drink, and they'll go out, and they'll bounce out, and they'll commit suicide or whatever they'll do, and you'll sit here and figure out why they did it. I'll tell you why they did it, because they're alcoholics. And their mind got decked up on them, and nobody ever told them, get down on your knees and do it, and shut up, we don't want to hear what you have to say. It's not important, just do it. Because there isn't a whole, it isn't your program or my program, there's one program, only one program, and it's written in the book. And that's the deal. And you know, I'm just like one guy in AA. You know, I've been around 33 years. I've watched the guys bounce out and bounce in. And this is just my opinion. I mean, I'm not paid for this. You don't have to buy into it. You just stick around here long enough and watch what happens to you and watch what happens to other people. And you'll see how deadly this disease is. I mean, the book's pretty clear about the whole thing. But your mind's not clear about the whole thing. The book is clear, but your mind's not clear. The book says you must do this and you have to do this. And This is what does it say? It says we thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. The book is pretty clear about abandoning yourself utterly to Him. See that your relationship with Him is riding great. The book is pretty clear. The fellowship ain't that clear. The fellowship isn't clear at all. This marvelous fellowship, which I think is great because we all pal around together, we have good times. You know, every once in a while you hear something that, you know, strikes you, that helps you. But basically the fellowship sort of says, don't worry about that big book. Don't worry about it. Don't listen. Don't worry about it. That guy Russell. Yeah, I know that guy Russell. He's a hard ass. You know, hard ass stuff. Forget that stuff. Don't worry about it. That doesn't apply to you. And what that will do for you is it will gain you a lot of friends. And when you're pretty much, you know, pouring yourself, I'm not talking about you. I'm pretty much a whore. You know, I know I'm a whore. I know I'm a guy who will do anything to make you like me. I know that I'm a guy that wants to be accepted by anybody. I know that I'm a guy that the last thing I want is to offend anybody. I don't want anybody walking out of here thinking bad of me. What a sucky life that is. Because, you know, every once in a while somebody, you know, has indigestion and has to walk out the door, and I look at them because I'm so upset, and I say, what did I say? You know what I mean? You know, it's so much better when you can just be yourself and say all sorts of shit and have them hate you and not give a crap. You know what I mean? It's so much easier because you can be yourself. The great thing about it is the people then that like you, they like you, even though you're a goofball. You know, the people that don't like you, at least they don't like you. They don't like somebody you're... It's not like they don't like somebody you're pretending to be. You can be you. You know what I mean? That's the deal. It says, not that we reduce ourselves that much, but we had to have God's help. This is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. How do you play God? How do you play God? Well, I'll put you this way. Whenever you think... How about this? You ready for this? Whenever you think you're playing God. Because what do you think about? You think about what's going to happen, what you think's going to happen, what you're going to do when it does happen, how it's going to turn out, how you want it to turn out, how you think it should turn out. You got a book that says the things you have to be convinced is that you can't manage your own life. And you only spend, how many hours a day thinking about how you're going to manage your own life? Hey, admit it! Come on! All you do is think about you and how you're going to make things work and what you're going to say and how you're going to do it. That's your whole life is thinking about that stuff. You want to? I know what the deal is. You want to think I'm full of shit. You think I must be wrong because this is what you're thinking. That's got to be wrong because I do that all the time. How would I live if I didn't do that? I can't envision a life without doing it. So you think that it's impossible because your paradigm is. Since you were a little child, the only way you thought is the way you're thinking right now. You're living by your wits, trying to make sure you don't get hurt, worried about things, because if you don't think that way, something bad's going to happen to you, so you got to control everything. I know, I get that, because you don't know of any other way of thinking. So for you, no other way of thinking exists, so you think I'm wrong, and I'm, maybe I am, but maybe I'm not. How's it been working for you? How about that? So it says, here's how and why we first had to quit playing God, which has to do with our thinking. You know how you get out of it? You trust in God. How would trusting God get out of it? It says it didn't work. Next, we decide here and after the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal. We're his agents. He's the father. We're his children. Most good ideas are simple. This is a simple problem. Simple deal. He's in charge of everything. He has power over everything. You have power over nothing. Mm-hmm. You just stay close to him and do what his works are and try to figure out who he is and what his works are. Sounds kind of goofy, right? But I guess it would cut down on the thinking. Cuts down on the thinking, right? You don't think it works? I've been working this deal for a long time. It works great. Just because you don't think it works doesn't mean it don't work. You know, there may be another way of living this life. There may be another way of doing this thing that you're ignoring that's actually in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When we sincerely took such a position, that means seriously trying it, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Listen to this. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he's all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He'll take care of you no matter what you do as long as you stay close to him and perform his work well. Now, if you don't stay close to him and you do what you want to do, you don't turn your will over in life unto him and you do what you want to do, you know what's going to happen? Well, you know what's going to happen. You've been dealing with it. You guys aren't 2 years old. How's it been working out for you? How'd that work out for you? You know, going out there trying to wrest out of life and do this and get that and all. How's that working out for you? Well, you wouldn't be here if it was crappy. You know, that's the bottom line. It hasn't been working out for you. You just don't know of any other way of doing it. You're like convinced when you first come in here, if you stop drinking, everything will be okay. And then you stop drinking, everything falls apart. You know, you just can't even believe what I'm telling you. This has got to be total bullshit, right? Well, maybe. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now listen to this. Established on this footing, you're going to like this one. And this is what I started off to say. Established on this footing, we became less and less. Remember I said this book prophesizes what's going to happen to you. How are you going to change? We become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. What if that was true? I don't remember when I stopped. I don't remember. I can't tell you when it happened to me. I don't remember when I stopped going to meetings because I needed to go. When I stopped going to meetings because I needed a meeting. And I started going to meetings to see if I could help people. I don't remember when that happened. I don't remember when that happened. I just remember that there was a time in my life where I had to go to meetings in order to not blow my brains out, in order to make it through the day, in order to not drink, in order to get rid of the resentment, in order to get rid of the drama, in order to somehow set myself right, because I was crazy, even at 9 years or 12 years or 15 years or whatever. And I thought it would never change. And somehow, some way, at some point, I stopped going to meetings because I needed meetings, and started going to meetings because I wanted to help people. You understand? I'm not saying I'm a saint or anything. I'm just telling you exactly what happened. And apparently that happened to them too, because it says if you do this thing right, it says one of the benefits you're going to get by being established on that footing is you can become less and less interested in yourself and your little plans and designs, more and more interested in how you can help people. So apparently I'm right on track. Only took me 25, 30 years to get there. But hell, I had nothing else to do anyway. So I might as well do it. So what must it feel like? What must it feel like to live a life inside or outside the rooms when you're more concerned with other people than you are about yourself? What do you think that feels like? I'll bet there's a lot less thinking going on. I bet you think less. I guess you get that, what do they call it, that peace? What did it say? It says, as we felt new power flow in us, we enjoyed peace of mind. We discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of his presence. So here, in Vision for You, it says the following. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself, as we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness. Lonely alcoholics are lonely. Man, if there's one thing alcoholics understand, is being alone and lonely and separated. I ain't talking about just regular lonely. I'm talking about Voyager spacecraft left the solar system on its way to Alpha Centauri, and there's nothing for 100 trillion light years. You know what I mean? I'm talking about out there lonely. I'm talking about separated lonely. That's alky lonely. That's being in a bar. That's being in your home, drinking booze to a phonograph all alone. That's being in a bar with 10,000 people drinking, being all alone. That's being in a stadium with 30,000 people, but still being alone. I'm talking about alone. It says, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did, then would come the oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this will understand. I understand. You get that? You all get that? You know, if you don't get that, we suffer from a different disease. Because I get that deal, that loneliness. So I'm 12 years old, 10 years old, and I'm living in Great Neck, New York, and on Long Island. And what happened is all the guys would get together and choose up sides for a baseball game or a football game. I'll tell you what, when you're 10 or 12 years old, the only thing that's important is how you can catch the ball. And I was always crappy at that stuff. But I was there with the guys, you know, they're 10 or 12 of them, whatever it is. And you ever been in a situation, I guess kids still do this, where they usually have the two captains. These are the two guys who are like the best, you know what I mean, at baseball or football. And they're standing, like, side, one standing to the right, one standing to the left, and there's a whole group of guys, like 15, 20 guys in the middle, and they're choosing. And one guy says, I'll take Joe. And so Joe goes over to this side. He says, I'll take Ralph, and Ralph goes over to this side. And I'll take Carlos. Carlos goes over this side, I'll take Joe. And what happens is as they're picking people, you know what I'm talking about? The group is getting smaller. You know what I mean? They're picking, it's like the draft, you know? It's like the NFL, they're picking the guys that are the best that they want the most and not picking the guys that they want the least. And I'm sitting in the group and I'm praying. I don't even know I'm praying. I'm just saying, please don't let me be last. I just didn't, listen, this is the truth. If I was picked second last, to me, it was like winning the Oscar. You know what I mean? It was like, I just didn't want to be the guy they hated the most. Because, you see, if you're the guy they hate the most, what happens, let me tell you how they pick you. You're left there all alone in the middle of the deal. There's nothing blocking you. You know what I mean? And what happens is, they're all laughing at you. And then one guy says something like this, oh, do we have to have them? And what? Because what they're trying to say is they would rather play with one less than with you. You know what I mean? That's how bad they think you are. And you're all alone, and there ain't nothing blocking that deal out. And it seems to me like I was always picked last. And maybe that's true. Maybe I was only picked last one time. I don't know. But all you need is to be picked one time like that, and it's a life-changing experience if you're an alcoholic. And I remember the thoughts that went through my mind. And I wasn't drinking, but I was an alcoholic, all right. I needed a drink. But I remember the thoughts, and the thoughts that go through my mind is, I know there's not a God, because I'm praying that they all die, or I die, or explode, or get removed, but there ain't no running, and there's no hiding. So what happened was, I found myself doing something, quite naturally, that I've been doing all my life. What happened was, the one thing that I was petrified of, is that as bad as I felt, as horrible as I felt, I was worried that they would find out how bad I felt. I don't know if that makes any sense. I was more worried that they would find out that they hurt me. You understand? If I should cry or run away, then actually the pain I was feeling. So what happened was, what I did was, I, even though they were laughing at me and I was feeling pain, what I did was I laughed with them. Like I was part of, even though I was not part of them, they were there and I was here. I would laugh like it didn't bother me. In other words, I acted completely opposite of the way I felt. I'm saying, hey, this doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. And I would laugh like, I would laugh at me like I was standing where they were looking at me. I was like building up like some sort of wall. And when I did that, I was building up some sort of protective wall, something that was protecting me from them. Okay, so they wouldn't be able to see what's really going on inside of me. And how did I know that by the time I was 30 years old, that wall was 20 feet thick? And nobody was ever going to see what the hell was going on inside of me. And you wanted something that was really scary? At that point, I couldn't even see what was going on inside with me. All I could do was talk about my feelings and my emotions and what happened and what you did to me and you made me scared, you made this, and have no clue as to what the hell was going on. Not even a clue. The closest thing I came to a clue was, give me a fucking drink. Give me a drink. Because I have no idea. It would take 50 psychiatrists and scalpels to try to figure out what was going on with me. I didn't have a clue. You know, and you think you're going to take away the drinking, the booze? And one night, I'm on relay. I did the relay in Dade County for 8 years. You called up any Friday night between 11 o'clock at night and 8 in the morning, Alcoholics Anonymous, you got me. Which is probably, for 8 years, that's why nobody got sober for 8 years in Dade County. Man, when we get to step 12, I'm going to tell you stories about that deal. Guys that would call up and says, what's your name? Well, they want to fire me, you know. And they want to report me. I'd say, oh, you're not going to. Russell. He says, Russell what? He says, just tell him Russell. They know. I just, all right. He says, you're not going to report me, are you? I mean, I wouldn't want to lose this job. I didn't have the heart to tell them that the reason I had it for 8 years is because nobody wanted it, you know. So one night I get a call on relay from some guy. It's like 11, 12 o'clock at night. And he says, look, he says, I'm 3 years sober, and he says, I don't know, I feel like drinking, I'm going nuts here, and I'm going crazy, and blah, 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 he's going like that. So one of the things I would do is I try to find out where they were, because if there was a meeting or something still going on, I'd try to get them over there. He says, you know, I go to, you know, I said, where are you? He says, I'm in Carl Gables. I said, great. I said, listen to me. There's a group called the Carl Gables Group. I said, that's my group. He says, it's on the North, it's on whatever it is. I tell him, I'd say, the meeting, they had a meeting like from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. It just broke up. There's people there. I want you to go over there to that meeting and talk to somebody over there. And this is what the guy says to me. He says, I'm at the Carl Room. I'm at the Carl Room. What happened was, the meeting was there. He was in the meetings. He got finished with the meetings. And rather than talk to somebody there, he picked up the phone and called up Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that may sound crazy to you. It don't sound crazy to me. I get that deal. He was embarrassed and ashamed. He didn't want to talk to anybody there. He wanted, I have guys that come up to me all the time. They want to know who the perfect sponsor, how can they get the perfect sponsor? Somebody just like them, you know, somebody, the perfect sponsor, the perfect, they want to get the right sponsor, the perfect sponsor. You know, the sponsor, let me tell you, there ain't no perfect sponsor. You just get this guy, and you got a guy, and you run with it, man. And you go with it. You know, it's not a lifetime contract. You see how it works out, you know? If you drink, you can blame him, right? No, no. But you will, you know. That kind of stuff. If he drinks, get another sponsor, you know? That sort of thing. It's, you know, but I mean, that's the disease. The disease we have is a disease of hiding out, not talking, not explaining, not even doing it. And look at the stuff we got to do between the fourth step and the third step and all the stuff we got to do as far as introspection, following directions, making lists, just so when we finally talk to somebody, we might come out with something coherent that means something more than I hate my parents, you know what I mean? Or they screwed me over at work, you know what I mean? How are we going to get to the... I mean, we're just a jumble of, they're screwing me again. I mean, we come in here unemployable, 3 months later, we're underpaid, you know? All we want to talk about is how the world is screwing us, you know? They're screwing with me again, it's happening again. I'm depressed, I'm this, I'm that. What are you going to do with that? Like, nothing. I'll tell you what, go out and drink. You know, go out, I don't know how to handle that. You're depressed, go drink. You know, what do you mean depressed? Did you do your fourth set? The stuff that we have to do, that we have to write down, the pains we have to go through, just so we can approach somebody and sort of talk in a coherent fashion about perhaps even scratch the surface of what's going on. So we get some insight, we get some feedback, you know, from one person that may help us, you know, really, maybe instead of take that 10-foot wall, maybe you peel off like a foot of it, you know, so now you got only 9 feet going. And then as you go to meetings, more and more, 8 feet going, and then 7 feet going, and then 6 feet over, and maybe by the time you're 20 years, you've got it down to like, it's just like an inch. And then you're transparent. And all of a sudden you're going to meetings to try to help other people. And some guy says, I couldn't talk for an hour. I said, why not? All I'm doing is talking about myself. You know, I've been alive for, you know, it'll be 65 years in March. You can't talk for an hour about what's really going on in your brain and yourself? Well, of course you can't, because you don't know. You wouldn't know what to say. You wouldn't know what to talk about. But, you know, by the time you get it down to an inch, and you've been dealing with yourself, and you've been talking about yourself, and you've been talking about what's going on, you've been sponsoring, you know what I mean? You know, you have an idea. You're transparent. You have an idea of what's actually going on in your life, what's happened in your life, what's going on in your life now. Not that you're perfect, not that you still don't have your deal going on, but you can talk about things that make sense. They make sense, because they're the truth. And man, I'll tell you, the truth will set you free. First, it'll piss you off, but it'll set you free. Whereas Jack Nicholson says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. That's how important this fifth step is. It's a freedom step. And you know, when you first do it, you're going to feel some freedom, you know? But you're not going to get the whole thing. It's just a template for a way of life. It's all these steps, whether it be the fourth step, the third step, the second step, the eighth step, the ninth step, are basically templates for a way of life that you're going to do over and over and over and over again. It's not like the fourth step is going to get rid of everything or the fifth step is going to get rid of it. This is how it works. This is how we live. This is a way. This is not, you know, some people say this, well, I'm just going to get through my steps. What do you mean get through your steps? It's a way of life, you banana. Continue to take personal. You don't get through the steps. Yeah, well, I did my steps. Really? Have you done them 55,000 times? Because that's when you start getting the relief. You know, I start saying, some guy comes up to me and says, I feel like this, I feel like that. I say, oh man, don't even worry about that. That'll go away in 15 years. No, but you see, I used to drink and get rid of it in 5 seconds. I used to drink and get rid of it. I can take a pill and get rid of it. Like I can smoke a joint and get rid of it like that. I can go get laid and get rid of it like that. It'll last for about 5 minutes or something like that. But you know something? Whenever you have to use alcohol or any type of substance to do anything, you lose the ability to do that thing without the alcohol or the substance. You know, whenever you need to have sex, let's say, to feel good about yourself, you lose the ability to feel good about yourself unless you're having sexual relations all the time. Whenever you need alcohol in order to feel, romance to feel good about yourself, you lose the ability to feel good about yourself and to be of good purpose without being in a romantic relationship. Whenever you need alcohol in order to do anything, whether it be dance to it, you lose the ability to do that thing without the alcohol. It becomes a crutch. It becomes an idol. You know, because like Bill Wilson said, the emotional, the next frontier in emotional sobriety, the real problem is unhealthy dependencies. Dependencies on everything. Don't get the feeling that just alcohol is our dependency. We depend on everything. Hey, listen, we're true alcoholics. I can get addicted to anything and everything. People, places, things. It's unbelievable. You keep peeling that onion and getting that deal going on. I thought you were leaving, Julie.
No.
Oh, you're not. Okay. So, you know, that's the deal. That's what the fifth step is all about. That's what it's going to get you. You know, that's why you're going to want to do this thing. That's why it's going. That's why it's going to work great for you. And you know, that's what you know. And that's what they say happens. You know, you get rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You experience much of heaven. You know, he becomes the centerpiece of your life. This is the program. Hey, you know what this is? This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, have you guys heard about this? I'm just wondering. This is the first time you're hearing about it. This is the deal. Have you heard about this disease we got? I mean, am I the only one who's got this disease? I mean, like, am I talking about somebody else here? Maybe I should go to a different meeting. You guys don't recognize the disease, the thinking? You don't recognize the garage? You don't want the freedom, the new freedom and the new... What do you think the new freedom and the new happiness is? It's a new freedom and new... How can you experience the new freedom and the new happiness thinking the way you're thinking? Feeling the way you're feeling? You know? It's a new freedom. It's a new happiness. You lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. You know, it's not that you get rich. It's just you're not that worried about it. You know, it's that, I mean, you just, it's just the worry is not, you may still worry about things once in a while. You don't become like a robot, but it's not that incessant, obsessive, I can't do it, I can't say it. It's not that when you do the meeting, I can't, I'm not ready kind of worry. It's not that paralyzing kind of worry that stops you from interviewing for the job, stops you from doing 99% of things you want to do in your life, stops you from going to Bible study. You know why people don't go to Bible study? I mean, the Bible's mentioned all over the place. I'm convinced of this. It's mentioned in the books. It's mentioned all people hear the Bible, Bible baby. You know why people don't go to Bible study? I'll tell you, 99% of the alcoholics that don't go to Bible study and study the Bible, you know why they don't do it? Because they worry about what other people think about them. I will tell you something right now. If Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie came out and said they're born-again Christians and they're going to Bible study and everybody in Hollywood is going to Bible study, everybody in this room would be going to Bible study tomorrow. Did you hear what I said? I'm not just joking about that. If going to Bible study was cool, if cool people were going to Bible study, every person in this room would be going to Bible study and saying it's the greatest thing in the world. And you don't even realize that you don't even do this stuff out of fear of other people's judgment. You think you have free will, you have nothing. Free will is what you do when you do something even though other people will laugh at you. Free will is not doing crap because you don't want to be, because you want to fit in. Free will and courage, and that's what they talk about in the book, is when you do crap that people are going to laugh at you, and maybe it's not the most popular thing in the world, even in AA, but you do it anyway. You know why? Because you have free will. Because you're free. You're free to do something because you're curious and you want to know. Not the kind of groupthink that you guys are involved with. Not that crap. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought I would control myself.
You're doing so well.
I was doing okay right up until that last... That last deal, right? Well, I said I was sorry. I made an amends. It's that bleeding beacon stuff. You know, every once in a while it pops out. God bless you. Thank you very much.